Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I am your host, Gopher Gazette's own Ryan Burns, and we welcome you to what I think is going to be one of your favorite episodes as you start to build that excitement towards the 2026 Gopher football season. As I have been in negotiations for this episode for some time, and I'm glad that we were finally able to get it done. I was able to get 20-25 minutes with both Minnesota coordinators. So you're going to be able to listen to upcoming here Minnesota offensive coordinator Greg Harbaugh as he details what he's learned from his first 3 years as Minnesota's offensive coordinator. What are the next steps for Drake Lindsey? How does he fix the run game? And maybe most importantly for this fall, what has him most confident that this is going to be the most efficient and explosive offense he's had in his now 4 years at the University of Minnesota? And then on the defensive side of the ball, Danny Collins was able to share some insights into position battles upcoming, such as defensive tackle, linebacker. How do they replace Coy Parrish? Expectations and how Anthony Smith is dealing with now being the preseason Big Ten Player of the Year. So we're very grateful for their time. And I know that as we approach kickoff here, we're under 5 weeks until your favorite Minnesota team takes on Eastern Illinois. There's a lot of questions. I have a lot of questions. And that's where I think at Gopher Gazette, we do a great job of trying to break those things down. But instead of listening to me, which I know many of you love my dulcet tones, but unfortunately for you, we get to go straight to some of the most important people in the Gopher football hierarchy, that is the offensive and defensive coordinator. So to start here, we're going to speak with the offensive coordinator, Greg Harbaugh. Enjoy the episode. Joining us today on Gopher Gridiron Radio as we get ready for the start of the 2026 Gopher football season is a highly requested episode, and we were able to work with the powers that be to get this one done. So joining us today is the offensive coordinator, Mr. Greg Harbaugh Jr. Now, again, I say Harbaugh the way that it is because I feel like even going into your fourth year, you probably still get Harbaugh on probably about 25% of the equations. But I appreciate you willing to join me in the media jackals and be able to have a discussion here ahead of the 2026 season. So, Coach, how you doing this morning?
Awesome. Excited to be here. Appreciate you having me on, man.
So I know that we have we don't have all the time in the world. I wish I could get 90 minutes with you, but you are a very important man. So let's start with just going back over last season, where now with the benefit of hindsight, you've had 8 months to go back over the 2025 tape. It's how would you characterize last year's offense in your mind? And I guess maybe more importantly, looking future, is what did you take away or learn most from your third year being the coordinator that can help you now going into this fall?
I think that the number one thing that I learned is just the value of an experienced quarterback. It was a fun season. It was challenging. It was definitely the most challenging that I think I've had personally, just week to week, game to game. But it was really, really enjoyable to go through it with Drake. And there's been seasons in my career where you really you look at the end of it and it's like, man, that was a grind. That was a struggle, whether it was at Division III school or it was at another school, or it was just like, okay, you have different challenges and things along those lines. But with Drake, it was just every week was so valuable for him to gain that experience, 13 games, man. Like, I just think it's invaluable. You cannot replicate what he went through winning 8 games with the organization, being the leader of the organization. You can't do it in practice. And you found out that when we went to Buffalo and you saw him do some really good things and you saw him do some things that he had to correct. And then week in, week out, he was consistent with what he was doing. And then when he would make mistakes, you have to correct it because you all want to win in the short term. That's the number one thing. But I've always said to him is that his whole career is a long-term project. And it's always been about that plan since the day he got here. And I keep saying that to him. And that's what I love about him is that I've just seen so much maturation and so much growth out of him. But I would say, to answer your question long-winded, I really learned like it's the value of an experienced quarterback, because that can help so many things.
So I heard you on Dan Casey's podcast, and I essentially stole the idea and wrote about it here at Big Ten Media Days. I talked to Drake about it. And one of the things you mentioned on that podcast was the idea of giving Drake Lindsey a worksheet. Now, it's essentially homework, more or less, but I want you to do two things for our listeners here. One, can you describe the worksheet that you gave Drake before the bowl game? What's on it? And I guess maybe even more importantly here, why is it important in your mind as the offensive play caller that you know what Drake Lindsey's quote-unquote favorite plays are on a given week?
I think it's critically important because he's the guy that is making the ultimate decision. I value his opinion so much, and it's over time that's happened. Like, he might have come in early on last year and given me an opinion on things, and I probably didn't listen. And because he's got to go through struggles and he's got to go through those experiences. Then as we went to the bowl game, we got to that point where I wanted to see what he thought of the game plan. I always know going on Friday, we go through it. Every Friday night, he has a routine. And really every Thursday, we have a routine where Thursday's a big meeting where he's doing a lot of the talking. Friday, he's doing a lot of the talking. And then Friday night at the hotel, Keegan will go through every play call on the sheet with him. He'll read it to him. He'll read it back. And then he'll kind of go through his thought process on every single play. Okay. That's kind of his routine. Mm-hmm. I know every week he draws up every single play that he goes through that's on the game plan on a sheet of paper or his iPad. Then I added this piece in where I got this from Coach O'Connell. And
you're talking Kevin O'Connell with the Minnesota Vikings.
I got this idea, and he would give the starter this worksheet. And it's top 5 first and second down passes. And it can be categorized week to week based off of quick game, drop back, run action, whatever he feels most comfortable with. What pictures are he seeing based off of the defense that we're facing that week? Then I'll have him rank third and medium and third and long, okay? Because those play calls are critically important because, number one, he's got to feel comfortable with making the decision full speed on third down, and I want to know what plays he feels most comfortable with. And I've gone through the week where – he might say, "Coach, I really don't like this play," and we just throw it out. That will come on Wednesday night after we've already repped third down. And so we'll adjust, and then we'll add things, and he'll go from there. And then in the green zone, he will rank his favorite first and second down passes and favorite third down passes. And it's usually from 3 to 5 plays. Third down's obviously a little bit different because you don't carry as much down there. And I think that was very valuable because I can call the game based off of what he feels most comfortable with, especially attacking the defense early on, you know. And it might be where he has a favorite play on first and second down there in the green zone, and I might not get to it till the fourth quarter knowing that he loves that play. It might be something else that we're trying to set up throughout the course of the game. And he understands that. But everything he puts on that sheet now, I think is incredibly valuable because it's going to allow him to play fast and play confident.
Well, that's where the funny part of the story, too, is how you implemented it, which was prior to the bowl game. And why I say it's funny is because I think about the game-winning touchdown in the Rape Bowl to Jalen Smith, where I talked about it again with Drake in Chicago, where you called that play because that was one of Drake's favorite plays. Now, it wasn't the perfect situation, and I'll let you get into that, but I also told him, hey, buddy, I know you made the throw to Jalen Smith, but did you see Drew Bibber wide open near the goal line, which is where the ball was supposed to go? And he chuckled and was like, yeah, I got to see that 48 hours in hindsight. But even why I want to stress this is so important is just like, again, that was third and long, third and seven plus, overtime. You guys are down something. But as far as the way he explained it to me, Greg, that, again, that wasn't the perfect situation for that favorite play call of his, but you went to it and it ended up working out.
Well, it's twofold. Yeah, it was a first and second down call, and then it went to one of those things where I literally said to him, I was like, this is your favorite call down here in this situation. Mm-hmm. And he could have called the play without even me saying anything. And I think the biggest reason why the ball was completed, and yes, we talked about the read, and it's actually a great teach play of that concept. Okay. Because you get it in training camp, you get it in spring ball where it's okay that you're off that particular safety. That safety played the outside route. Mm-hmm. But the thing is that Jalen and him had so much synergy and so much chemistry that the ball was thrown in the exact spot that post should be thrown. Mm-hmm. And we talk about the landmark of Jalen on that route. He knew. I mean, he let it go. And Jalen made a heck of a catch, and the rest is history from there. And then it's just he was able to play confident. He was able to play fast. But you still got to make the right read. And that's what we joke around about it and we talk about it. But like it's a great learning moment for him. But it also proves to him that I am comfortable with whatever he feels comfortable with because he is the most important guy on the field. And then from there, it all trickles down. How he plays and how he runs the offense is a direct result in what we're probably going to get that day.
So one of the quote unquote questions I get all the time from national media, whoever it may be, even the fans. And I think it's an important question for the offensive coordinator to give his thoughts on is what is the next step for Drake Lindsey? Because that is such a broad question. You can speak statistically, you can speak, again, physically, where, again, now he's our slim king at 16.5% body fat, which he's very proud of, and he misses getting his wet burrito with your quarterback coach there, Keegan O'Hara. Trust me, now that he's down to 228 pounds. But it's such a broad question, but it's obviously very important because starts 14 through 26, in theory, should look a little bit different than 1 through 13. So I'm getting very long-winded in saying, you can take it wherever you want, but when you've talked with Drake here over the last 8 months, what are the next steps for him?
The first thing is this is very broad. Running the offense. Number one, he's not going to have to think pre-snap. As much as he thought about it and thought he had gotten to that point last year where it was like, man, I can control this motion. I can control this shift. I know like there are so many things now that he did in the summer, did in the spring where he can just the operation of the offense and running the show is second nature to him now. It's instinct. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the one of the things that we hope to see. The second thing is, he had 164 incomplete passes last year.
Not that I watched you know that number specifically and haven't dove into the stats a couple times. Yeah.
Well, I watched – after the season, I watched it, and I watched every incompletion. And I wanted to see where he has come since the season through spring, winter, the summer. And I watched them all yesterday. And I watched them all again. And – the number one thing that he has to really, really show and over the next 3.5 weeks of training camp is when we call a pass play, the ball has to go where the scheme calls for it to go. And I think that that is where he is going to take the biggest strides. He already has and how he's developed in the meeting room, on the field. That is really improved. And I think he did some very, very nice things last year, and then there were some things that were great growth moments for him. Mm-hmm. And the best quarterbacks, you hear all these quarterback coaches and offensive coordinators at the highest level, they talk about the quarterback just is a direct extension of the offensive coordinator from a play caller standpoint. When it goes to him in the huddle, we know exactly what's happening. It's the same in the run game. When you call a run, you want the running back to hit it in the exact aiming point that he's supposed to hit it at. The same thing at quarterback. You want the route to be the same exact way, and they have ways to be able to defeat that based off of coverage, technique, and things along those lines. And I think that's the next step offensively, and the best offenses you see, exactly what's getting coached is showing up on tape. And I think that that's where he's really going to take the next step, because he is talented. You know, you can you'll be able to see down the field throws, intermediate throws, but he's really going to need to improve in that aspect. And I'm excited about it because I think he has. So those are the two things. And then if I add one other thing, it would be just those under 5 yard throws that where I really am encouraged by him. And just, that's all fundamentals. You know, not missing the check down, not missing the arrow when he gets to the back, the quick game throws, all those things that are direct. They complement the run game and they complement the offense, like being able to be a high completion percentage on those types of things.
Now you mentioned it, and it's probably the biggest talking point about your offense. And it's something that we've talked about every Wednesday during the fall. It's something that we've talked about when we get availability here in the spring. It's something I'm going to ask you about here in the month of August, and that's the run game, where when Darius Taylor was healthy in the four games last year where he got 19 or more carries, you ran the football. In the nine games he wasn't, it was a much bigger struggle, and that's where I just spent time in Chicago talking with it with your head coach. But when you look at it now going into year four, what are the biggest keys if you guys are going to be able to run the football efficiently, effectively, consistently, or what does that statement even mean to you in and of itself?
Okay, so every offseason I sit down and I reflect, and this is the fourth year of me being the offensive coordinator here. Yeah. I'm really grateful for the opportunity every year because I think I learn something new every single season. And I learn a ton, but there's usually like one or two things that are just big picture that I learn and I attempt to grow from. And I think when I look back on the previous 3 years, the first thing that I would do is I would put on some team that I liked and I would watch their pass game. And this January, when I got back in, when we finished up with recruiting and all that, I sat down and I watched every single run that we had last season. I watched other teams run the ball. I then looked at it, number one, from an identity perspective. And I didn't look at us. I looked at other teams. I looked at, okay, what are the best teams in the country in the National Football League that are running the football? The number one thing that you look at when you see that is it's an identity. They hang their hat on one to two runs. And specifically, it's usually one run. I'll use examples. Okay. The LA Rams, they put the ball down, push comes to shove. They are running duo downhill from under center.
Very basic level of what a duo run is for the listeners.
So a duo run is just a downhill penetrating run. Okay. The running back's aiming point is going to be the A gap. He's going to be downhill. It is a physical mindset run.
Okay.
And that's what they do. You put on the San Francisco 49ers. Their number one run is the outside zone play. At the end of the day, that's what they're going to run. Everybody knows that's what's going to happen. I looked at college teams. I looked at the University of Miami. And when I watched them, I saw that running back, because that running back was exceptional at what they were asking to do. They were in the pistol, and they ran downhill, physical run. I think it's the identity of that. Then secondly, I looked at, okay, how can I create the most physical environment for our offensive line? Because at the end of the day, when you're an offensive lineman and when you're a kid, the number one thing that they say to them is like, okay, you go to be an offensive lineman in high school, they're going to teach you to be physical. So what can we do in college that we can just say, okay, here's a physical mindset. We're going to come at you. We're going to put our face on our aiming point and we're going to be physical. Number one, that's the number one thing. At the end of the day, when I put on the tape, I want to be able to see our offensive line and our tight ends be physical at the point of attack. Most of the time, when you look at an outside zone play, sometimes that's not the most physical run. It has to complement the downhill run, whether it's out of the shotgun or whether it's from under center. And that's what the biggest thing. And so I go back to 23. I go back to 24. And I look at, okay, I wanted to be something offensively in a run game perspective that maybe we needed to adjust. The first run we put in 2025 was outside zone. The first run that we're putting in is a downhill run. That's what it is. Like when you put on the tape for 12 games at the end of the year, I hope that people can say and see that the number one thing was we had an identity in the run game and we were physical. That's the only thing that I, at the end of the day, that's the only thing I care about, because just like what Coach Ibrahim says every day to the running backs, and every day to me, 4 + 4 + 4 equals a first down. And it's all twofold. The O-line coach has to be in unison with the running back coach. The running back coach has to be in unison with the O-line coach. And the aiming points and the tracks of the first two steps up front have to be a certain way. The running back has to be on his aiming point, the same exact spot. Same thing I mentioned with Drake. If I call a pass, the ball has to go where the scheme calls for it to go based off of the coverage that we're getting. Same thing up front. We get a movement up front, they got to be trained in that. The running back has to be trained based off of, okay, what's his aiming point on duo? What's his aiming point on inside zone? What's his aiming point on outside zone? And then from there, once the play's started, we have to react and we have to train the guy to make that quick decision so that we can get that 4 yards. And those are the two things. At the scheme, man. It's one of those things where you can work on backside cutoffs up front. You can work on the tracks of the outside zone. You can work on inside zone from the shotgun. You can work on D-gap reads. You can work on all those things. Number one thing is identity and physical. And that's what I looked at, where I was not pleased with myself on the physical nature of the offense. And then that's not even me grouping in the wideouts and the how they're involved in all this stuff, and how Coach Fricke's done a fantastic job of teaching those guys the scheme and understanding what they have to accomplish and what they have to do. It's twofold. I want to be explosive. I want to do this. I want to do that. I want to be physical. Bottom line.
Seems like that would make a lot of sense in the conference that is the Big Ten Conference.
Yeah. Correct.
So that's where a couple final ones here to close would be, as much as it is about Drake Lindsey taking the next step, it's also going to be somebody's got to catch the ball from Drake Lindsey, where your top three tight ends from last year are gone. Four of your top six receivers who played snap-wise are gone. So it's going to be a big discussion topic here from now until Eastern Illinois. So when you look at, let's just stick with the receiver room, where you do get Jalen Smith and Javon Tracy back. You've got Noah Jennings, Zion Steptoe. Hayden Moore has gotten a lot of recognition here this offseason. For Fricke's room, how would you kind of characterize it? As I think there's a lot of question marks, at least from a 30,000-foot view.
As I've said before, the receiver room is a job-based position group. Mm-hmm. And that's how we are as an offense. And if the way we sit down and we talk about it as a staff – We have to put those guys in positions to do what they can do at a high, high level. And we have to identify that over the course of the next 3.5 weeks. And I think our coaches have done a great job since January of identifying what we're going to be and then adjusting based off of what they can do and what they can handle. And then there's certain things that are non-negotiables, just like I talked about in that receiver room. They're going to block, and they're going to learn why they're blocking and why they're doing certain things within the scheme. Then from there, certain guys are going to have bigger roles based off of what they show over the next 3.5 weeks. And I look at the spring as, okay, we're figuring out who we're going to be. Okay, what do we need to take into the summer to improve on based off of what they showed that they can do? And that's one thing that I'm very encouraged by in May, June, and July is how our receivers have attacked the summer. And when we're out there with them and we're working on techniques and fundamentals, that's been a huge point of emphasis across the board offensively, but just how they've approached their technique and fundamentals and how they've shown, okay, we are executing the certain things on air. Maybe it's in a controlled individual drill with Coach Frichte where they're really working on their techniques and fundamentals. Now, when we get to practice, they have to then implement those techniques and fundamentals into the scheme and operate fast and decisive against the defense. And I'm very, very encouraged by the group as a whole, because I think that they understand the job-based system, which then trickles down to them being as selfless as possible. And those guys are going to have to know that one guy might have 7 catches and the other guy might have 6 catches. And then that guy might have 3 catches. It's my job to ultimately put the ball in their hands, depending on what they can handle, and find those playmakers and see who can do it. But I don't really want to single out certain guys, because I'm very encouraged by the entire group. And I'm really encouraged by it when we take the field for the opener. Let's see how they do. Let's see how they operate when they get the lights on them and they get a crowd out there. But we have to put them in that environment and put them in those situations to see how they succeed in practice.
So the final one for you today is going to be this. Again, it's just about 10 words here, and I want to just throw it at you. Is what has you confident that in year 4 now as the offensive coordinator at the University of Minnesota, this will be your most explosive and efficient offense in your tenure?
Most confident? I think it's the players. It's a players game. Like I mentioned, whenever during this, scheme is scheme. Mm-hmm. I'm very excited about Ashton Beers, you know, that how he's handled himself and how smart he is, his demeanor. He is the same person every day. I'm excited about having Drake back. I'm excited about having that continuity. I'm excited about Greg Johnson taking that leadership role day in and day out in the weight room. I'm excited about what I just talked about with the receiver group, of how they've come together as they've gone from like a group of guys that are all vying for touches to really, I think, a brotherhood in that room, and how I see them all connect. And Mo and how he's developed that running back room and how hard he grinds them and works them to be as mentally tough and physically tough when they carry the football. It's just, that's what's got me so encouraged. I think the synergy that we have as a staff, and then that infiltrates through the players. And I think that I've really been excited about that. Every day when we come in, I see these guys come in, they stop in and they hang out with the staff. It's cool to see that growth. And I think that's something that I learned over the years. You know, I go through back to year 1 where it's like, man, you get all these ideas and you have all these things in your head and you're like, all right, we're just going to go out there and we're going to run them. It's going to look great. And that's not how football works.
Right.
It takes time. It takes patience. It really puts everything into perspective. And that's why, like I said to start this thing off, that I'm very grateful for the opportunity to be the offensive coordinator for the 4th straight year, because all these things that I learned years ago, I've really taken it from January and I've put it all into one. And then after Wisconsin, the day after Thanksgiving, we'll look up and see what we look like, you know. And I think I'm very encouraged just by our players' demeanor, attitude, their work ethic, and then the staff. I'm really grateful for our staff and just how they pour into these guys daily.
Well, that's going to do it for this one. I appreciate you taking the time. I know you're a very busy man here with fall camp on the horizon. I will see you during fall camp. And unfortunately, or fortunately for you, I don't know how you view me as a part of the Media Jackal conglomerate on Wednesdays when we get to sit there. You're going to unfortunately be seeing this face every Wednesday asking you about the run game, Drake Lindsey, why'd you make XYZ call? But I appreciate you being willing to join us here on the podcast.
Can't wait, man.
Every dating app swipe is another loss. Gym bros, fake CEOs, straight up losers. So now the only app I open is Moto Casino, because at least there I'm surrounded by winners, real winners, thousands of them. While everyone else is in the single swamp, I'm at home relaxing while stacking bonuses, hitting wins, and playing all my favorite Vegas style games. Moto Casino, the only app worth your time.
Moto Casino, the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. Social Casino.
And welcome back to this part two of Gopher Gridiron Radio, getting you set for the 2026 Gopher football season. And we just had the offense on. Well, guess what? We get everybody's favorite defensive coordinator now in Danny Collins, for just ahead of his second season here calling the defense. Danny, I appreciate you being willing to come on here to talk to the Gopher football faithful, but how are you with fall camp on the horizon?
Oh, first off, thanks for having me. Always great to promote our program, especially our defense. And it's been an awesome road from January on through to right now in July, and getting ready for fall camp. And it's the best part of the year. Here we go.
So I want to begin with asking you about last year, where you take over as defensive coordinator with Corey Heatherman leaving, and you get to go through the first year, or just month 1 through 12, as being the defensive play caller, having it be your defense. So now, with the benefit of hindsight, how would you characterize what you learned most, I would say, from last year's experience?
Yeah, you know, I think last year, you know, there were positives, right, that you need to learn from and continue to grow. And then there's negatives that you need to grow. And at the end of the day, right, like, any job you're in, you're constantly preparing, right, for that next opportunity, right? But you really don't know exactly what's going to happen until you're really in the chair. And, you know, you can prepare as well as you can, but then there's going to be certain things that happen to you that you may not have thought about because you were never in those shoes before. So those are the things that you really need to learn from. And sometimes it needs to be a scar. Sometimes it needs to be something that you have success in. Either way, you have to grow from your experiences, because at the end of the day, it is experience, right? And, mm-hmm. you know, I'm kind of looking at it this year, just like, you know, when we had our first baby and we had Rocky, you know, you're kind of growing up and you understand how you're being raised, right? But you're seeing it through that lens, right? And you're seeing how your friends are being raised. And then when you start getting older, you're looking and you start, you know, kind of creating a family, right? You're seeing other people in your circle. You're seeing your sister and how she's raising her kids and how the coaches are raising their kids. And you have an idea, right? And then comes your time to actually do it, right? And, you know, when we had Rocky, you know, Maria and I had Rocky, you know, some of the things you're doing, you're always questioning because you've never been in that situation before, right? So, right. You know, am I changing them the right way? Am I putting them in the crib the right way? Am I feeding them the right way? So you have all these questions and you're learning on the fly, right? Some things you're doing wrong that you're going to correct. Some things you're doing right that you're going to keep doing right, right? Mm-hmm. And then we have our second, we have Patrick. It's funny because all those questions that I had with Rocky are now, you know, I'm certain on what I should be doing with Patrick. Right. And that's kind of how I'm looking at it this year of, I went through year one with, maybe I didn't have all the answers. And I'm not saying I will always have all the right answers, but I'm into year two now where I'm certain on what's coming and the job ahead.
Well, that kind of leads me into asking you, just, I guess, philosophically or schematically, I don't pretend to be, you know, certainly at the football level that you are, but that's where I'm curious. What have you learned, or what do you want to change or optimize from last year to this year, where essentially every year your defense is going to look different, or at least I believe it should, because your personnel changes every year, and what the strengths and the weaknesses of that defense last year compared to what you believe your 2026 is going to look like. Is that something I should even think about that way, or how do you view it?
you constantly have to adapt when you're a coordinator, and you know, the scheme is the scheme, the system really is the system, right? So, you know, from Western Michigan to here, we've essentially ran the same system, but that system has been adapted over time. It's based off of, number one, the personnel that you have. You hit that on the head, right? But then number two, also what you're going against, right? And offenses, as they evolve, right? We have to evolve, right? But I think, you know, after the year, you kind of, when you take a step back, I kind of broke it down into an organization standpoint. You know, what do we need to get better at in terms of the plan, right? And that's all through January to right now, right? Then it's, you know, schematic, which, you know, hey, in these calls, are we doing the right thing? And do we have the right tools, right? That goes into the personnel aspect of it, of are we putting the guys in the right spots, right? Then there's a situational aspect of it where, hey, maybe, you know, I learned some things last year situationally of how I can be better on, you know, they get a fourth and one and all right, here comes the shot, right? And I can be better that way because now I've felt it, I've experienced it, right? And then you have the personal aspect of it, of, you know, the not allowing outside noise and things like that to get in and just focus on, you know, what you're doing and trusting that and trusting your gut. So kind of break it down into those four things and then create the best plan. But at that same point, like, we've done a lot of things in terms of the organization that's different from last year. Cause if I do the same thing, I'm going to get the same results. Right. So, right. We've really adapted that, focused on certain things in terms of concepts rather than just calls. And that's going to allow guys to play a lot faster.
Now, I've listened to your head ball coach talk all off season about how you have 50 newcomers. It's 31 high school guys, 19 transfers. Now, specifically within the transfers on your side of the ball, there's two that you guys, I really want to discuss at least. And I think they're Aiden West, the Michigan State transfer who played for your former boss, Joe Rossi, at Michigan State last year. And then TJ Bush, who you guys got a firsthand look at when you guys played at Cal Berkeley. So I want to ask you this. Why were they two guys from the portal that you guys aggressively pursued? And then what have you seen from them, those two specifically, since they've been on campus since January?
Yeah, number one, I mean, when you're looking into the portal, you're obviously looking for a position that produces, you know, mm-hmm. and both of those guys have great production. And then you look at the tools that they have, and then do they fit schematically with what you do, right? And, you know, Aiden, you know, we'll start with him. You know, he's a guy that played as a freshman, which is really hard to do, especially in the Big Ten, right? He has a unique skill set. We knew about him, you know, prior to, because we recruited him kind of right at the end there. So right. we were able to kind of, you know, get his personality too, because at the end of the day, right, like, the guys that work here, it's all about fit. Right. And you guys know that from Coach Fleck, but like, that's true in terms of, like, it's the right fit here. So already understanding who he was as a person, how he ticked, his work ethic, right. Then seeing his production on the field, he was in a very similar system, right? So you knew that that was going to translate. And then he gets here and he's a guy that, I mean, he practices and plays like a pro. I mean, the guys in here, we had a summer run last week, mm-hmm. and he's in here 45 minutes before the run working on his body, right? And like, that's a guy that understands, and he's young, right? And that's right. a guy that understands that at that age, you can take him and plug him into our program. And it's guys like that, that, you know, do very, very extraordinary things here. And then that elevates the room too, you know, with guys like Mike Gerald and Naeem and John, and just seeing all those guys raise their level, you know, because you bring someone like that in, you know, it's great for the overall football team. You know, with TJ, you know, we got to play TJ, so we had a little bit of understanding and knowledge of him from the other side of the ball. But I remember when I first saw him go in the portal, I'm like, that guy is a disruptor, right? And, you know, what we do with, you know, our style of defense and how we attack people, like, that's how he plays. And, you know, the cool thing with him is, like, he may not be the biggest guy or the strongest or longest or fastest, but that guy plays with extreme how. and he is a disruptor, right? And you just think about him off the edge in our defense, and it's a no-brainer when that guy goes in. It's like, all right, we can create so much value here on not only first and second down, but third down as well, and putting all those pass rushers on the field at the same time. Like, that's – it's going to be really fun for us to do that.
Now, I would argue the most – gifted, talented, I don't know, however you want to put it, and you can correct me if you think I'm wrong here, is Anthony Smith. And I just spent time with him at Big Ten Media Days. He was voted by us Media Jackals as the preseason Big Ten Player of the Year. You've seen him get unanimous All-American selections this offseason. And I would argue, and I said this to him, that he is a player that has some of the loftiest expectations heading into a season that I've covered now in my sixth, this will be my 16th year covering this program. And with that is pressure. With that is expectations. And so how do you believe he's handling it here this offseason when you got the great news in December that he's coming back? That's great. But guess what? Everybody's going to know who number zero is, because if he just, he doesn't even have to duplicate what he does last fall statistically, he's got a great chance to become the all-time leader at this institution in sacks and tackles for loss. But the question remains, there's a lot of pressure and expectations on him. So how have you seen him handle that every day behind the scenes?
Yeah, number one, I mean, he's just such a special person, right? Mm-hmm. And you see that when you get to interview him. And I mean, again, he's leading our team in community service. He's doing all those things. And then to be able to come back and to practice the way he practices and lift the way he lifts and prepare the way he prepares, I mean, that's how it's supposed to look. And, you know, we've seen it in our time, and you've been covering Minnesota for a long time. There's been guys here that have been projected to be the first taken in their position in the draft, and they've done it, like Tyler Newbin. Right. And there's been guys that have projected to be, you know, in the top of their position, and they're not drafted at all. Right. So the pressure and the expectation on that stuff, like at the end of the day, pressure is controlled. Right. So we want that, and we want that pressure. And I know Anthony wants that, but he's not allowing that to get into his play at all. Like, he's focused on being the best version of him every single day. And I know that's like cliche to say, but that's real. And when you watch him practice and you watch him play, that's what you see. You see a guy that is obsessed with his process. And I love that, because at the end of the day, like, that stuff's all great, the preseason, you know, awards and all that stuff. But you know, we're focused, like, at the end of the day, we're focused on the process. And when you focus on the process, then you're going to get the postseason awards, right? Preseason awards, no offense, don't really mean anything, right? We're going to focus on the process. And then the postseason is where you get those things once your process is really clean. And that's what his is right now. And the way he comes to work every day, the way he's connecting the team and the defense, it's been really fun to see, because you could see that go either way in college football when guys decide to come back and, you know, oh, they're going to take it easy. Like, he's not taking it easy. Like, this guy, he truly wants to be, you know, a first pick in the draft, not even just a first rounder. So to have a guy like that with that mentality, that sets the tone for our defense.
Now, a spot that I might have the most questions on the entire team, and I think definitely on your side of the ball, is defensive tackle. That's what's going to happen when you graduate four guys. You had an NFL draft pick and Devin Eastern there. But I look at all the bodies in that room, and no one has played, I believe, more than 85 Big Ten snaps. Now, you've tried to mitigate that by taking three transfers. I know you have some young guys that you're excited to get a look at, too, as we get into fall camp here. But who are the names, and what are your expectations for a group that is just so green in terms of Big Ten experience?
Yeah, you know, that – I would say, you know, that position, it's not really a position of concern. It's a position of opportunity. That's the way I see it, right? And
yeah, that's a defensive coordinator speech right there, if I've ever heard one. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, the same thing you can say for 2024, right? Is, you know, a lot of people, you know, on the outside said that going into that year, you know, it was like ranking the defense. The safeties weren't even, I don't even know if they were on the page, right? Because it was like, what are they going to do at safety? And you look at that 24 year and you're like, all right, the safeties might have been the best position on that defense that year, right? So it's not necessarily that there's a lack of snaps. It's just there's a lack of opportunity, or there's a lack of experience, which creates that opportunity, right? And I'm really excited for the guys that are one had great spring balls, right? You have a guy like Riley Sunrum, who's been in the program, who was recruited as a high school guy, developed within our program, bigger, stronger, guy that understands the system. You have him that's super reliable. You have a guy you brought in with, you know, Crowder, and you have Chapman, and you have Sid Caba, you know, those guys that, you know, have played football other places that are now coming into our system, that have gotten, you know, spring ball in terms of not just reps, but the knowledge part as well, right? You have a guy like Theo, you know, who we're really high on Theo, and, you know, he's been, you know, practicing his butt off and running his butt off. And I'm excited when those pads come on to see, but you know, we have a collection of guys that we feel the opportunity is there for them and to go get that opportunity. And however it shakes out, it shakes out. But, you know, training camp's meant for you to put the ball down and play and show how we play defense here. And, you know, we have other, you know, answers. Well, you could always put Anthony inside too, and he has no problem doing that, you know, cause he can shoot. You get him on a guard, you get him on a center. Like, I mean, that, again, that changes things for the offense, right? So you certainly have answers, and we're excited for the opportunity ahead for those guys.
Now, the other spot I've spent a lot of time talking about here this offseason is the spot that's being vacated by Devin Williams. And seemingly you've talked about it, PJ's talked about it. I think two guys kind of come to the forefront there, and Emmanuel Carmo and Matt Kingsbury. And the way I've discussed it, and I want to see how wrong you think I am, because I know that, you know, us in the media always get this wrong, which you can always feel free to take shots. Trust me, I get it. Where I compare it, I don't know if you're a huge baseball guy, to platooning, what they do in today's game, where if it's a left-handed pitcher, we got to have the right-handed guy in the batter's box, vice versa. Well, in my mind, what Matt Kingsbury's strengths are and what Emmanuel Carmo's strengths are, they kind of go hand in hand with how you would want to platoon them in an aspect. Now, I think ultimately you would probably want one guy out there, but correct me if I'm wrong, but is that kind of how you see it, is trying to make sure who's ever alongside Mr. Green Dot Maverick Baranowski out there, you're trying to play to their strengths? Or how do you characterize that race for the other linebacker spot?
Yeah, you know, when you start forming what you're going to do defensively, it always starts with personnel, right? With who you have, right? And then from there, then you adapt the calls, right? And certain guys have certain strengths, certain guys have certain weaknesses, right? But our job as coaches is to highlight those strengths and to put those guys in the correct positions, right? And both those guys can play well linebacker. There's no doubt about it. Both of them are different, like you said, in terms of how they play, right? So it's just a matter of finding those situational, you know, opportunities for them. And again, there's no job one yet, right? So that's the thing, like going into training camp, that's going to be really fun, is watching those guys go and compete with each other, you know, to go play. But at the end of the day, like, they're both, in my mind, like they're both going to play a lot here with what we do defensively, especially, you know, once you get into our bear packages and things like that. I mean, either guy can go off the edge. Either guy can be in the box. Third down, we get super exotic and we're walking around and blitzing from all different type of angles and areas. And they both have really improved their coverage over the spring as well. You saw that in the spring game. So I'm really excited for both those guys to just have a heck of a training camp and just go compete and be the best versions of them.
Now, there's one guy in your secondary I'm confident is going to play 500 snaps, and his name is Aiden Goosby. But my question to you as his position coach is, Danny, I don't know where you're going to put him, because you started him for two games at the end of the season at corner. He has played a lot of strong safety. You've got a wide open position there at nickel. And I feel confident, like I said, that he is one of your better defensive backs. Now, I've spent time talking about it with your head coach in terms of he's the jack of all trades. But is Aiden Goosby's position on a Saturday more about the other guys around him, or is it about where he fits best, or is it all kind of just go hand in hand?
I'd say it all kind of goes hand in hand. I mean, at the end of the day, we got to get our best players on the field, right? And Aiden Goosby is one of our best players, right? So he is going to be on the football field, where I may not, you know, be able to tell you that right now, because he is just so valuable with what he can do. I mean, he can play strong, which he's played mostly his career, but he can play that cover nickel position, and he's getting bigger and stronger now to where I do like him in the run fit at that nickel as well. And then the guy can obviously play corner, which he did the last 2 years. So his flexibility allows us to be creative on defense, and it allows other people to have opportunities to make plays as well, and to keep guys fresh. Because at the end of the day, right, like if we're as fresh as we can be, we're a better defense, right? So we want to do that. That is, you know, an objective for us. But getting Aiden Goosby on the field is a priority for us, because he's one of our best players. And I love him too, because he's another guy that he's gone through the program for all these years. He's seen everything. And now it's kind of his opportunity and his time to lead. And it's been really fun to watch him take that role. And it's been also fun because he's a guy that's all about his teammates. And that's the cool thing. You know, in a world that we live in today, some guys might say, oh, I need to play this position, or I need to play that position, or I'm transferring. Like he said, wherever you put me, like I want to do what's best for the football team. So I really appreciate that from him because he's a team guy and everything that we're about in our program.
So I got two final ones to close here today, and it's another talker that's been talked about. We've talked about it, whether it's in the spring or whatever that may be, is you've got an open safety spot now where Coy Parrish is no longer here. Someone that you recruited, spent a lot of time with. I know that he's still in your good graces, and I know that's to be a fact. But when you look at the guys competing for that, whether it's a strong or free safety role, depending upon what you do at Kerry Brown, I mean, we've heard about Zach Harden, Garrison Monroe, Makai Smith, Zahir Rainier, Aiden Goosby potentially there. But when you look at trying to get that other safety spot filled, how do you plan on doing that?
Yeah, there's really, I mean, at the end of the day, there's really two positions, right? Because, you know, we play with three safeties, right? So, you know, there's a strong, a nickel, and a free. And really, what we're doing in training camp is figuring out what the best combination is, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously Kerry Brown has played so much football for us and he's super valuable. But again, that guy, he has played strong, free, nickel, right? And it's fun because wherever you plug him, then the other guys, you know, fit accordingly. And how we're training those safeties now is, you know, everybody gets cross-trained, you know, which is a little bit different than what we used to do, right? So that's why now you're able to see, you know, if a guy goes down, then you're able to put your best guy out there, right? And it's, he knows what, you know, calls to make and all that stuff. So we have a collection of guys that we feel very, very strongly about. You know, if we play tomorrow, I have no problem with playing those seven safeties in a game. Like, I really don't. Like, those guys are all reliable. They know the exact calls. And they all bring something a little bit different. You know, Goosby's a guy that can cover and he can play a post and he has quick acceleration. Kerry can kind of do everything. Zach Harden and Makai and Garrison are kind of the bigger bodies that have maybe less experience in this league, but again, great opportunity, right? Then you have a guy like Zaire, who again is a guy that has gone through the program and truly the process of right. being on a scout team and now being on special teams. And then it's like, there's a role for him, you know, in this thing as well with his skill set of, you know, underneath coverage and short area bursts and, you know, things like that. So we have a collection of guys that we feel very, very strongly about. And it's, you know, my job in training camp to just get those guys in different spots and see who, you know, shines best where at the end of the day.
So the last one for you would be this. You've been around this defensive unit now for 8 months. Again, we've talked a lot about personnel and how it changes year over year. But what have you seen heading into fall camp now that has you optimistic that your defense will consistently be there for 13 games? What is different about potentially this year's unit personnel-wise, personality-wise, you just growing in your second year as defensive coordinator, that you think this unit, which I think is a chance to be pretty special, will consistently be there for fans to watch on Saturdays?
Number one, I think it's the player leadership. You know, the player leadership is ultimately, right, and Coach Fleck says it, but elite teams, players lead, right? Good teams, coaches lead. This is a player-led team and a player-led defense. And when you have a guy like Maverick come into the D staff room and it's me and him and he's going through his expectations of what he wants for this defense, you have a really special thing going, right? And to be able to see the leadership of Maverick and Anthony and John Nestor, the focus is just the feel is different right now going into this year two of this defense, right? With just the leadership and the focus right now to go out. And again, it's the process, right? So we're not focused on the exact end goal, but we know where we want to go, but we also understand the process of how we get there. And that tone is going to be set on Sunday when they walk in the building. But again, it's really been set by those players, and they've had a tremendous summer working out. They're connected. I mean, it is a really, really fun defense to coach. And again, it goes back to that leadership, but I'm excited because you have leadership at every level on the D-line, the linebackers, and the DBs. And now it's time to go out there and execute and play. But you also hit it consistency. That's going to be the word that we focus on because we need to be consistent. There were times where we had great elite defense, right? And then there's times where we didn't, right? And that can't happen, right? It needs to be a consistent from game one to the last game we play. It needs to be consistent, and that's going to be our focus.
Well, I know you're a busy man. Fall camp's around the corner. I appreciate you taking some time out of your schedule to talk to us, and best of luck this fall.
Thanks, Ryan. Appreciate it.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Modo, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Modo, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Modo Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Modo Casino.
Download the Modo Casino app today.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details.
Modo Casino, America's social casino.